Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to today's broadcast. If you're having a fantastic day, wherever you are, and whatever you may be doing, with you as always, I am your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to take a few moments to make sure that we paid fair and appropriate homage to the passing of a gentleman, a statesman, and somebody that was more than just a politician. Bottom line is, a week ago today, Fred Thompson passed away. And as a result of that passing, I spent a lot of time thinking over the course of the past week, and I have actually been in genuine mourning. And that's surprising to me, because this is a man I've had a few opportunities to have extended conversations with. When he was the United States Senator for the state of Tennessee, in that capacity, I had multiple discussions with him. And in that capacity, I felt like we did get a pretty good feeling of who each other was. It was to the point that he remembered me by about the fourth or fifth time we were having these conversations. There's a lot that can and should be said with the passing of someone like Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson was everything that you've heard in the last week, if you've been paying attention and listening to the people who knew him well and who knew him best. But he was more than that. He was an actor. He was a fine litigator. He was a statesman. He was someone who was extremely sharp, but he was somebody that had a genuine interest in serving the will of the people and doing what he thought was in the best interest of everyone, putting his own personal interest aside in the effort to do that. He was a man who kept his promises. When he first ran for U.S. Senate, he promised that he would, in fact, only serve two terms. And he did. He kept that promise. Same thing that Lamar Alexander did, only Lamar has not kept that promise, as he's now serving his third term after actively campaigning. But that's another story. In the end, Fred Thompson was exactly the kind of man that D.C. needed more of. He was decent. He was hardworking. He was an inspiration to more people than he'll ever realize, because he came from truly humble beginnings and he worked his way up. He managed to develop the type of relationship with people that allowed him to become a spokesperson for the very essence of conservatism. When he entered a room, everyone was acutely aware, and he was the type of person that after a few minutes of talking with even some of the most hardcore, diehard, so-called progressives, would find themselves ashamed to not be on the same side on the political philosophy of this man. Fred Thompson was more than just a politician. He was more than just a senator. He was more than just an actor. He was a man that led by example, and he was a man that was tenacious. He was a man who used his Southern wit and his Southern charm as a means to cloak the very shrewd operator that he was. He was able to outmaneuver people intellectually when he so chose, when it was for the benefit of the people. And it was an ability that while he had it, he never used it against the people. On a very personal note, like I had already mentioned, I have had the honor and the distinction of getting to have several extended conversations with him. I doubt seriously that he would have recalled me by name or specifics at this point in his life. But during his time serving in office and during some communications I had while he was campaigning in 2008 for the Republican nomination to become president, I came away from those conversations being transformed somehow. He is one of those people that, even though I never really thought about it, didn't really connect it, he was kind of a hero to me. And he was the very first person, by the way, just completely personal note and not having much to do with anything, but he was the very first person who said to me that I should be involved with talk radio. Now, I'm not doing this today because of him and him having said it, but the fact that he had said to me that I was always asking him the right questions always led me to believe that that was what's important in starting conversations. When you're discussing politics in particular, asking the right question is probably the most important thing that anyone can do. So, ladies and gentlemen, quite honestly, he had an impact in my life in a way that he'll never realize, and one that I didn't realize so much of the time. But he is one of those people that has led me to believe that it's important to do everything that you do as well as you possibly can, to take pride in what you're going to do, to take pride in what you are doing, to be the best that you can be. Those are things that are missing in large amounts here in modern America. While it's tragic that that's missing, it's even more tragic that we now face an America that is somewhat diminished for the loss of Fred Thompson. Like I said, he was more than just everything you've heard from his constituents and from his colleagues in D.C. and his colleagues in Hollywood. He was truly a leader. And he was truly a great man. The world is a little bit dimmer today for the loss of one of its brightest lights. We all now have to try to find the next bright light. Because the other major message that came from Fred Thompson was the same one that came from Ronald Reagan. The same reason conservatives stand up and fight today against the insanity of the liberal logic, if that's not oxymoronic enough for you, and that's the simple belief that America's brightest days, that America's best days are still ahead. Simple optimism. The belief that everything that's been done that's bad and that's wrong can be undone, can be fixed, even if it does take a little time. The belief belief that America not only is that last bastion, that last shining city on the top of the hill, the last hope for freedom and liberty, but the quiet confidence that she shall endure. Humanity cannot exist without belief in a better tomorrow. We become something less than human when we allow that to take over our thought process. The very reason we have faith in a God above, the very reason we get up in the mornings and go to work, the very reason we stand for hours on end in whatever lines and whatever waiting rooms we have to do in order to have our voices heard. That's where we're at. Now, for those of you who might be listening live, there is something going on with the technical, so you'll probably lose the live feed here in a little bit. But please, if you listen to the podcast later on, everything should be intact, so be patient. If you're listening via Stitcher or TuneIn.com or any one of the other multiple places, iTunes, wherever you're listening to the show, it should be uninterrupted and fine. So at any rate, before going on today's broadcast, I wanted to make sure that all of you, my listeners, knew how much Fred Thompson meant to me. Proper respect, proper remembrance. He was a communicator, he was a statesman, he was a litigator, he was an actor. But more importantly, he was a man. He was a man of his word, and he was a man who believed in doing while others just talked about doing. He is exactly the kind of man that Washington, D.C. needs more of. So with that, I'll take a quick break, and then when I get back from the quick break, we'll have a discussion about the Keystone XL pipeline. So stay with me, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, I am back. Thanks for staying with me through the break. I just needed to take a short break to try and change the whole mindset. Because I have to tell you, I mean, I found myself in literal mourning at the passing of Fred Thompson. Thompson was truly one of the greats, period. When it comes to conservative politicians, especially from the South, he did more and was capable of more than just about anybody else that I know of, anyone else that I can think of. He ranks right up there with Reagan in recent years and anyone else. But now let's go ahead and switch gears, shall we? Let's talk about the liberal logic paradox. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This past Friday, Barack Hussein Allahu Akbar Obama decided that he was going to finally get off his backside and make a decision once and for all, one way or the other, when it came to the Keystone XL pipeline. And not to anybody's particular surprise, his decision was to say no. He was done. It's a done deal. He was over it. That was the end. Give up to the most radical of the environmentalist wing of the base. Or did he? You know, that's the real question. That's what almost no liberal had really thought about. Because, you see, I have a feeling, I have a working theory, that he didn't give in to the environmentalist at all. Now, it certainly looks that way when you think about it. From the onset, it would appear that way. But, in truth, let's just play a little game for a second. Now, I know most of you guys who listen to the show on a regular basis are familiar with Spooky Dude, a.k.a. the Evil Emperor, a.k.a. George Soros. You know, the money man behind almost every destructive policy throughout Europe and the United States that he can think of. And he gets behind them in a hurry. You see, George Soros has made a whole lot of his money through the transport of energy, in particular oil. But, you see, not through pipelines. No. You see, Mr. George Soros, he's made that money transporting oil primarily via train. And then, of course, by tanker truck once it reaches its various destinations. And he's had a good hand in that, too. Now, while most liberals aren't aware of that, I'm sure it'd be easy enough to convince them that, yes, there are evil, corrupt businessmen that are profiteering off of the transport of oil. Why not? It's easy enough to believe, right? Why wouldn't you believe it? It is, after all, the truth. Well, except for the fact that, you know, we don't really know how evil particular businessman happens to be. They, of course, just assume all businessmen are evil. I am fortunate enough to be able to attest to you that that's just not the truth. But you're never going to convince them, so let's not try that. You can try setting them up sometime and asking the question of, would you believe me if I told you that there was this evil businessman who had made tons of money transporting oil via train? Because, you know, you're setting them up and they're like, well, those evil Koch brothers, right? No. No, it's George Soros. Now, if any of them are bright enough to know who George Soros happens to be, and don't be surprised if you're talking to one of these useful idiots that the so-called progressives get to carry their water for them that doesn't happen to know who Soros is. You can just advance and leave it at there. But the most ironic part of the whole nine, and here's where it becomes a bit of a paradox within logical terms. I mean, if these so-called self-described liberals, who are really just useful idiots for the so-called progressives, if they were machines, computers, robots of some kind, presumably paradox logic can destroy the system. At least that's something they played with in science fiction before. You put a series of commands that the computer has to be able to function through and process logically, and the things don't logically go together, you create that logic paradox, and, you know, does not compute, and it shuts down. There's a lot of this going on with liberal logic. I still love that as an oxymoron. In fact, that's probably what I should have titled today's show, Oxymoron Liberal Logic. But what we're facing here is the oil that's being transported And make no mistake, it's still being transported. Nothing's stopping it. This oil is coming from one of the biggest natural disasters in Canadian history. This oil came up and was released as a result of this natural disaster. And the oil that's being used from this deposit is actually oil that's being salvaged from the cleanup attempt of the sands where the oil came from. So they're essentially collecting up all this product. They're cleaning the sand. They're taking the sand back in a attempt to fix the natural disaster. It's an oil slick cleanup. Just not in the water. That's what's going on here. So by saying that you're against this oil process in the first place is your first piece of liberal logic paradox. Supposedly, you want to protect the environment. So why are you against this effort to clean up this oil spill? Compute does not compute. Twitch, twitch. Then next up, while we're talking about it, you don't want this going through a pipeline. Well, they've been collecting this oil now for, what is it, about 2 decades? Something in that neighborhood. It's not going to stop just because we're not going to let the pipeline extension be utilized for them to transport it to New Orleans. Now, never mind the fact that Americans could have gotten some really great jobs off of this, and it would also act to lower energy prices here within the United States. Never mind the fact that the pipeline is, in fact, the safest way to transport the oil. And you should remind any of your so-called liberal friends that this is the case. Just point it out. If there's a leak in the pipeline, all you have to do is shut off the pipeline, and it stops. Much smaller cleanup. It can get cleaned up right away. It can get fixed, and then within a few hours' time, the oil can be flowing again with little to no damage done to the environment. But as it is now, that same oil is going to have to continue to be transported not via pipeline, but via train and via tanker truck. Now, granted, most of the time, those are fairly safe methods of travel, you know, in comparison to other modes of transport. But, you know, theoretically, super tanker ships are fairly safe. You do not expect that you're going to run aground and have huge leaks and what have you, but it does happen. When it comes to the big tanker ships, there's actually a much higher rate of train derailments and tanker trucks being involved in accidents. Much higher. So then what really does happen? Well, when a train derails and it's carrying this oil, well, lots of times when there's chemicals or energy products, petroleum products in particular, being hauled by a train, there's explosions, fires, burning, chemical inhalation of nearby people. Oil gets into the watershed. Basically, ecological disaster. Short term, typically, because again, we're still talking about a limited amount of oil, but still way more oil than would have been involved with turning off the pipeline. Same thing with the big rig trucks. If you've got a tanker truck driving across the highways, somebody sideswipes, does something crazy, the truck driver could be doing everything exactly right, some other driver is at fault, but you still create an issue where there's an accident. best case scenario, it holds, there's no leaks, and the driver walks away fine, and maybe there's just a little bit of damage to the truck. That's best case scenario. Far more likely, there'd be a rupture of the tanker, and there would be, at the very least, an oil spill wherever this transpired. And there could certainly still be the potential loss of life, both humans involved in the accident and then animals that deemed the repercussions of the spillage in the little ecosystem wherever this accident happened before it could get cleaned up. And the cleanup would still be larger than what would be necessary for a pipeline leak. Because the way these pipelines work now, there's so much automation and so many sensors at each possible juncture point that they know pretty quickly when there's the tiniest leakage. They can shut it off just nearby, or they can shut it off further away. We're talking very, very tight controls thanks to the advent of higher technological capabilities. Bottom line is, if you insist on not using the pipeline, you are in fact putting the environment in greater danger. That's what you have to remind each and every one of your self-identified liberal friends. Now, for the official commentary in regards to this, I will tip my hat to Fox News, and I will read you this. President Barack Hussein Ali Akbar Obama, okay, they just said President Obama, but I can't say that. If I'm going to say the word president, I have to throw the rest of it in. Have to. I much prefer to call him the occupier. But at any rate, Obama announced Friday that he has rejected Canadian energy giants TransCanada's application to build the Keystone XL pipeline, saying that the pipeline was not in the U.S. national interest. Now, here's where I want someone to challenge him over the next several weeks. You know, people are still going to ask him about it. That's the first place I want him to ask is, how is this not in the U.S. national interest? It helps to create jobs in a struggling economy, and it helps would, in fact, help to lower energy costs in the United States, as we would have more cheaper energy more readily available in the American market. That, to me, sounds like, especially in a time of a downturn in an economic crisis that we face, like that would be in the national interest. But anyway, I continue. There's a quote. The State Department has decided the Keystone XL pipeline would not serve the interests of the United States. I agree with that decision. Okay, this is Obama talking, in case you didn't realize this. And he said this as part of the White House press conference back on Friday. Now, the announcement caps a seven-year saga that has become one of the biggest environmental flashpoints of Obama's presidency. It comes just days after the State Department refused to agree to TransCanada's request to suspend the review process on the controversial project, which has seen enormous opposition from environmental groups. Killing the pipeline allows Obama to claim aggressive action on the environment that could strengthen his hand as world leaders prepare to finalize a major global climate pact next month in Paris that Obama hopes will be a crowning jewel for his legacy. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. The hypocrisy shows through once again as Barack Hussein Ali Akbar Obama is concerned about the environment, concerned about gaining credibility in front of the world stage as he prepares to take a trip to France, where he will be using multiple jetliners, tremendous amounts of fossil fuel, tremendous amounts of gasoline, jet fuel, I don't know, whatever else they'll be using. And then once it gets there, the fleet of luxury SUVs, including not only the one that he'll be in, but the two decoys that he might possibly be in, and the remainder of the fleet that will be used by the Secret Service. How concerned about the environment can he be? One can only wonder. Or maybe really shouldn't waste much time wondering. The obvious answer is not. Again, I, at the beginning of the topic, put my little theory out there. I think that this is the payoff to George Soros. At any rate, the Alberta-based TransCanada first applied for the Keystone permits in September of 2008. Shortly before Obama was elected, as envisioned, the Keystone would snake from Canada's tar sands through Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska, then connect with existing pipelines to carry more than 800,000 barrels of crude oil a day to specialized refineries along the Texas Gulf Coast. That was the vision. Now, Democrats and environmental groups latched onto Keystone as emblematic of the type of dirty fossil fuels that must be phased out. Environmentalists chained themselves to construction equipment and the White House fence to protest. But Republicans, Canadian politicians, and the evil energy industry touted what they said were profound economic benefits. Thousands of U.S. construction jobs and billions injected into the economy. Billions of dollars. Dollars? Oh my! They argued that transporting crude by pipeline would be safer, and it is, than alternatives like rail, and charged that Obama was simply being hypocritical for complaining about the lack of investment in U.S. infrastructure while obstructing an $8 billion project. Now, of course, Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama dismissed the claims that Keystone would be a major job creator. As you know, I'm Barack Obama, and Barack Obama knows what's best. Congress is serious about wanting to create jobs. This is not the way to do it. That's what Mr. Obama had to say before calling for a bipartisan infrastructure plan that he says would make a more significant impact on job creation. Now, of course, Republicans called the decision disappointing. Yes, very disappointing. President Obama's rejection of the Keystone XL pipeline is a huge mistake and is the latest reminder that this administration continues to prioritize the demands of radical environmentalists over America's energy security. That is a quote from Senator and presidential nominee hopeful Marco Rubio. Former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum condemned the decision as well. In fact, he sent out a little tweet directed at Barack Obama saying that Obama has abandoned American workers to appease the environmental fringe. And it's somewhat ironic, really, when you think about it, that after delaying construction for more than 7 years, postponing the jobs, revenues, and other benefits that would result from the project, the president now finds it pressing to make a decision, just as the company is asking for a pause to resolve any concerns. That's a quote from Senator John Hoeven of North Dakota. Some Democrats, such as Senator Barbara Boxer, you know Barbara from California, praised the decision as a positive step in protecting the environment. Doesn't Barbara own stock in some railroad companies, too? I'm pretty sure she does. Not that that would be anything to do with what's in question here. Nothing at all. This is about protecting the environment, right? No, that couldn't be part of it. At any rate, Barbara went on to say, quote, I want to thank the Obama administration for protecting the health of the American people and the health of the planet itself by rejecting the ill-advised Keystone tar sands pipeline, which would have brought the filthiest oil known to humankind into our country in large amounts. Once again, showing that Barbara Boxer has absolutely no idea what the crap she's talking about. I mean, the only one that's more clueless in the Democratic Party has to be Nancy Pelosi. Well, pass the bill, find out what's in the bill. That is not how it's done, Nancy Pelosi. But at any rate, Barbara says that this is the filthiest oil known to humankind. Barbara, this is oil that's been processed and cleaned up. But she is counting on the brain-dead Kool-Aid drinkers to just take what she says at face value, to not look into the facts and the truth and the reality of what's actually going on here. This is an environmental cleanup in action, and we get benefit from it. But Miss Barbara Boxer, who has no ulterior motives whatsoever, wants the American people to believe that the planet itself is better off if we just stop bringing this into the United States. Because, again, nothing changed as far as the collection of this oil. It's still ongoing. The Canadians are going to continue to try and clean up the tar sands. Nothing that man did that created the situation with the tar sands, but man is working to clean up the spill, to save the environment by taking this oil and cleaning it up. And then guess what? We've got product that can be taken and refined and used in a useful fashion for energy. Maybe they're taking the wrong tact here. Let's try this. Everybody call up Barbara Boxer and say, hey, Barbara, and any other Democrat that's listening, guess what? That oil, you can tax it. Boop, boop, boop. Deal's done. What other choice does she have? Oh, my gosh. The filthiest oil known to humankind. And she really said that, folks. She really did. And anyhow, of course, Bernie Sanders has chimed in as well. Bernie feels like support for the pipeline is, quote, insane. Now, ordinarily, I would completely dismiss anything Bernie Sanders has to say, but when it comes to talking about state of one's mental health, well, you know, I'd say he's probably an expert on what is and is not insane. He's been looking in a mirror for several years now. At any rate, went on to say, quote, it is insane for anyone to be supporting the excavation and transportation of some of the, here we go again, dirtiest fuel on earth. As someone who has led the opposition to the Keystone Pipeline from day one, I strongly applaud the president's decision to kill this project once and for all. So that's it, folks. That's where Bernie Sanders is. That's where Barbara Boxer is. And that's where President Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama happens to be on this topic. On a completely unrelated topic, just FYI, and you can find this story over at Breitbart if you are so inclined. You guys remember Governor Moonbeam? I think that's what everybody in conservative talk is calling him now, by the way. I don't think anybody has a significantly different nickname for California Governor Jerry Brown. Seems he's got caught up in a bit of a scandal. Jerry Brown has tried to explain why state experts were sent to survey his family's private land for oil and gas face increase. That's right. Even the people of California are starting to question whether or not he's truly Governor Moonbeam after all, because it would appear that he seems very interested in the opportunity to sell gas or oil from his family's farm. Now, he's claimed, of course, that he received no special treatment. Actually, he hasn't claimed. He's had people at his office claim this. I have never actually heard him come out and directly say anything. He sent people out to do this for him. Way to go, Governor Moonbeam. Way to be a leader. But anyway, his office has said over and over again that, number one, he received no special treatment and merely used the services available to every California resident. And that he was, quote, interested in the history and geology of his family's ranch. Not interested in drilling for oil or gas, and that he had merely requested public records, not a detailed study. However, there's a funny thing about that. Most people aren't really buying into those claims now, and there's a good reason why. As the Los Angeles Times wrote in its editorial page this past Friday, Brown asked Steve Bullum, head of the California Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, to conduct the survey a mere 9 days after he had started the job. He also received a report just 2 days later, an uncommon situation in state government. Because, well, let's face facts, when you ask for reports in state government, no matter what state you're in, no matter how good the people are working in that department, it normally takes a little while. To get a report just 2 days later means that this wasn't a case of somebody simply doing what any taxpayer has a right to get to, because there's already a backlog of orders. This is the action of somebody trying to impress his boss. Whether he asked for special treatment or not, it's pretty clear he got it. Now, being the governor, shouldn't he? Come on, California. You know Governor Moonbeam's just interested in the history of his family's ranch. So why not let him, I don't know, fast track just a little bit? Come on. Come on. Anyway, he also received a satellite map that was drawn up especially for him. Now, that's very interesting as well, isn't it? Very quickly, the use of satellites to get that done. In addition, the Associated Press has also defended its initial report, insisting that Brown was very interested in oil and gas potential, not merely historical information. State records obtained by the AP describe Brown asking state workers to assess the area's potential for future oil and gas activity. State workers also prepared a map for the governor's request labeled oil and gas potential. Kind of gives it away, doesn't it? And, of course, this map showed the oil and gas drilling history and the geology of the area. So it works out. Meanwhile, the Times concludes that it is not clear how that Brown was not getting thousands of dollars of free expert help at the expense of taxpayers. However, it does add, quote, it's inappropriate for the governor to call the head of the agency for help with personal business, especially someone he had just installed in the job 9 days before. It also was wrong for his aides to follow up with the agency to ensure that there would be a map and other specific information. See, state law in California prohibits elected officials from using public resources for personal or other purposes which are not authorized by law. In fact, that's the law in most states, if not all of them. California is not an exception to that. The term public resources includes equipment, vehicles, computers, and state compensated time. In other words, if these guys are on the clock, then they're getting paid by the taxpayers. So they're not available to go to work for you on a personal project, Governor Brown. Anyway, on Thursday, Republican leaders called for a full investigation. We know how well that goes over, don't we? Quote, if the facts are as the AP has found, then there will be a prosecution and probably a hefty fine at least. That's according to Assemblywoman Shannon Grove of Bakersfield. So, while that's completely unrelated to the previous topic, it still continues to point out a very simple, basic, fundamental paradox in the liberal logic. We want to defend the environment as long as it's making us money. We want you to believe we're defending the environment even when we're actually putting it at greater risk because we can make some money. That's what's happening here. The XL pipeline has been clearly demonstrated as a plus, a positive, a pro. How on earth can you possibly find yourself believing anything else? George Soros gets to make, George Soros gets to continue to make millions of dollars as this oil will now be transported as far as it can be by pipeline that currently exists, and then to trains and trucks. And it will make its way to refineries, most of which the same refineries that it was going to go to anyway, because these refineries have, in fact, been specialized for the tar sands refinement process. Some of these refineries are in the United States. So guess what? Some of this oil is still coming into the United States. Killing the pipeline project only further endangers the environment at the risk of the potential accident that can happen. You know, including but not limited to the type of accident that happens when eco-terrorists strike and try and intentionally derail trains. Not that that's ever happened anywhere, but it is completely possible that the very people that claim to be defending the environment can cause the biggest damage to the environment, and mostly because they're completely moon bats and have fried their brains on drugs and chemicals and don't think very clearly already. Now, they're not all like that. Some of them are honest to goodness, well-meaning. Oh, I get so tired of saying that, but it is true. Some of them actually are just well-meaning, just misguided individuals who think they're doing some great good. So if you want to see these liberals just their head explode, you have a friend that self-describes as liberal or self-describes as progressive who's happy, who's been celebrating the rejection of the pipeline, ask them what they know about how much money George Soros is making in Canada transporting this oil. Ask them if they know about how much in the way of stock, how much ownership Barbara Boxer has of certain rail companies that might happen to be involved with the transport of oil. Ask them about the potential loss of jobs in the U.S. as a result of making it harder to get the oil here for us to reserve and to actually refine it. Ask them why, if they're really concerned about the environment, they seem to want to shut down what is nothing more than an environmental cleanup effort. Ask them how much they actually know about the tar sands oil. Ask them how much they actually know about the majority of what would have made up the Keystone XL pipeline was actually already built. That this project was to simply connect companies in Canada to where the pipeline currently exists in the United States. Ask them if they really think that continuously raising energy prices is a good thing and that we shouldn't take steps, even if there are small environmental risks involved, we shouldn't take those risks in an effort, to reduce the cost of energy in the country, thereby making life better for everyone here? Such simple questions, but so hard for the liberals to grasp. At any rate, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take another break right now, and then when I come back, we're going to discuss, we'll discuss a little about Paul Ryan, his first priority upon becoming speaker, and we'll guide that into an interesting conversation about Obamacare. So stay with me. We'll be right back after this brief break. Thank you very much for staying with me through the break. The music that you're hearing right now, of course, comes from a service that I utilize. It is completely podcast safe, as they like to say in the business. I pay a small fee for the right to use it. The artists get paid. They're all independent artists. I know it's been a while since I've plugged the service, and I'm not necessarily going to call them out by name this time. But if you're interested in follow-up for podcast-safe music for bumpers and the idea of helping independent artists appeals to you as much as it did to me, feel free to pop over to tapintothetruth.com. And on near the bottom of the homepage, you can send me a message, and I'll be happy to send you the information about the group, the service, and I'll let you see the rest of what they do. One of the biggest things, you want to be legal with the bumper music, so you either pay a huge amount of money over the course of time to use more well-known songs from artists that are getting paid, most of them well enough already. And I really like the idea of helping the independent artists that are out there. They don't have a major label backing them. And this puts a little money in their pockets that they wouldn't ordinarily get. And it gets their stuff promoted. Now, the only exception to that is the song Miracle, that I use quite a bit to sign off with, more often than not, although I do put it in the bumper rotation sometimes too. Not that I always have much of a bumper rotation, because I'm usually jam-packed and talking, and I don't usually take very many breaks. Trying to get in the habit of taking more breaks, though, as I'm in the process of trying to get a few more sponsors signed on, and now moving to the point where I think we can take the show to a higher quality and get the tech bolstered up here and get a little more of my creativity involved here instead of just me sitting here talking. Because, I mean, I would love to be doing parody ads and all kinds of stuff, you know, and you get that from some other talk show hosts. You see it with some of their shows, and some of them are really good at it, but I still don't see or hear them doing too many things that are better than with anything that I could come up with, although some of them are definitely so unique I would not have come up with what they did. But anyway, you get the point of what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to compare me to anybody else. I want to be me. But there are so many other things that I think would make the show better that I would love to be able to do that right now I just either don't have the time or the resources to do. Sponsorship changes that. So also, while we're on the topic, if any of you guys happen to know a company that might be interested in sponsoring the show more directly, also take the same steps that I mentioned before in finding out more information about the bumper music. Send me a message or tap into the Truth homepage down near the bottom. It'll be great. Okay, let's talk a little bit, shall we, about Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, as you should know by now, unless you've been under a rock somewhere, is the brand spanking new Republican Speaker of the House. We had several weeks where politics was going on behind the scenes and everywhere else for that matter in the effort and the struggle to determine who is, who was, who should be the next Speaker of the House as John Boehner was stepping down. Paul Ryan was one of the early favorites from the establishment. It wasn't their first pick, but when it became pretty obvious that the first pick was just not going to make it, the Freedom Caucus was going to stand against him, and evidently he had some dirty laundry, which involved extramarital relationships. Well, once all that transpired, it was pretty much a done deal. He stepped aside. Paul Ryan was the next one put out, but there for a little bit, it really looked like somebody else was going to have to be called in, somebody who could get enough respect from the establishment types, but who also had stood on principles, who had made stands, who had proven themselves not to be sellouts, so that the Freedom Caucus, i.e. Tea Party type representatives, could feel like they had somebody that would at least be willing to hear them out and stand beside them in their efforts to move a pro-America back to constitutionally limited government type agenda. They wanted somebody like that, so it looked like, you know, somebody like Marsha Blackburn, somebody like a Daryl Issa, somebody who had stood on principle in some of their fights in the past, but who also made it quite clear that they were more than capable of pulling people together to get things done. And not just within their own party, but doing it in a way that they weren't compromising principles. So the hopes were, and of course I had Ken Crow on a few weeks back, and we discussed that very topic and who we thought the best prospects would be. However, as it turns out, at the end of the day, Paul Ryan made this impassioned speech where he basically just says, all right, I've already told you once I don't want to do it, but if you're really, really going to make me, I'll accept it if You don't expect me to travel as much as speakers of the house normally do because I want to spend time with my kids. Okay, well, that's fair enough. I actually don't criticize that. In fact, I can understand and relate to wanting to spend more time with your kids. I'm facing trying to squeeze more time into my schedule for my youngest daughter and her basketball efforts right now. So I understand that. I don't criticize that. But I do think that's subterfuge. I think that was thrown out there to try to get everybody going, aw, he's still a family man. He must be an all right guy. Which may be true enough. You know, I don't mean to diminish it, but I still get the feeling, very much the feeling, that still that's all that was aw. And then he continues where he essentially says, oh, yeah, by the way, I won't do it unless you let me change the rules so that you can't remove me later. That's once I start rolling. I know that you guys that actually were coming after Boehner and was going to take him out if he didn't resign on his own, that'd be the Liberty Caucus, by the way, you guys are going to realize I'm not any different. I'm not really a conservative. If I was, I wouldn't have tried to throw the veterans under the bus when I was proposing some of those budgets that I offered up. Now, don't get me wrong. There was a time when I actually really, really liked Paul Ryan. He was putting up and offering the Republican budgets, which, you know, we knew weren't going to go anywhere. But they were legitimate budgets, and they made sense, and they involved real cuts. And then it happened. In an effort to appease and try to get some support from some Democrats, enough Democrats at that time to maybe push something through, well, they offered up a budget. Paul Ryan offered up a budget that ended up gutting veterans benefits in order to spend that same money to offer up welfare-type benefits to illegal aliens. And yes, I'm going to continue to call them illegal aliens. And yes, guess what? If any group of anchor babies out there wants to make a cutesy little video cussing me out, just like they did with Donald Trump, feel free. Go ahead. I'm Tim Tapp. I'm not in the same position as Donald Trump, and I can't control national policy when it comes to immigration. But I got to tell you, you don't like Trump's ideas, you're probably not going to like mine. So go right ahead. Make your little video. Show how cute you are. Prove the point. I'm getting on a sidebar. I wanted to make this its own story later, but I find myself lingering into it. So bear with me. Excuse me. By making this video, you great, great geniuses that masterminded it, you're not proving the point that anyone concerned about illegal immigration is racist. You're proving the point that too many people in this country take way too much for granted, feel way too entitled, and have an over-exaggerated idea of their own personal worth without respect for anyone else's. I would go so far, and I actually did recommend this. This is the first time I watched this video, by the way. I would recommend and suggest that the activist behind it should be charged criminally for reckless endangerment of children and for criminal exploitation of minors, and you know, any other legitimate charges that you can come up with that can be attached to this, you ought to throw on them, bring them, arrest these people, put them on trial, let them explain how they thought it'd be cute to manipulate anchor babies, because, you know, just because you don't like the term doesn't mean it's not an appropriate and accurate description. They said it would be cute to have anchor babies cuss someone out. You know, I'm not living under a rock. I know that passes for entertainment these days for a lot of people. I've watched a ton of videos on YouTube where people were, you know, essentially they're critiquing movies, comic books, TV shows, what have you. And yes, I've watched them of my own accord. No one made me. Looking back, there's several of them. I wish I hadn't. But I recognize the fact that in several of these cases, lots of these people, because it is on YouTube, much like what you can and can't get away with right here on BTR or any of the other broadcasting formats that I use, because we pay for the full usage of it, either directly or through sponsorships or however we go about it, and because we don't fall under the guidelines of the FCC, we can say whatever we want. So if I wanted to make it sound like Eddie Murphy was from the 1980 stand-up comedy days, was the host of the show, and I was dropping F-bombs every other word, I could do that. Most of you guys wouldn't listen or take me seriously. Most of you guys would not, although I'm quite certain, based on everything that we see and all the numbers, that I would still have an audience. In fact, I'd probably have a bigger audience. It would just be a different audience, people who think it's okay to do that. Personally, I'm not against swearing per se. I mean, I know that I occasionally let a few references to certain individuals. I might occasionally let the word ass slip out or a damn or a hell here or there. There was a time when you absolutely would not get me to say that in private conversation, though. And it's not because I'm a goody-goody-two-shoe, but it is because I think that when it comes to that, swearing is something you do when you have no means left to intelligently make your argument. It's the same thing that the so-called progressives do when it comes to name-calling, denigrating you, trying to control the conversation by redefining the terms you use, and they take the cursing and name-calling once they're out of intelligent, legitimate arguments. But we can take it point by point, and I've got to get back to Paul Ryan on this. I haven't completely. I've switched tracks, but I haven't lost the first train yet, so bear with me. I apologize if it gets confusing. I know most of the folks that listen to the show on a regular basis, though, you'll be all right. You can follow me. You've been following me for a while now. This digressment is not something that's too terrible for you to follow. But the video, the Trump video, I debated on whether or not I would even talk about it, but I get because I wanted more time to calm down. But on a point-by-point basis, they talk about how they're offended by the use of the term anchor baby. Anchor baby is offensive. And then they cuss some more. And I get the point. They think they're very clever. You'll find this offensive. We're trying to be offensive so that we can make the point of how offensive we find it that you use this term. But then they try to say that anchor baby and the term illegal is code for racial dispersions like spick and wetback and some others that they used in the process. And, you know, it's any time you have some type of racial slur, when it comes from a point of true racism, then it's something that's not worth repeating. But people do it because somehow they think it's hurtful. And it becomes hurtful, not so much that the word itself means anything negative in and of itself, but because you change its meaning, you take it to mean something, and you let it bother you. Words can only hurt you, first and foremost, as much as you let them. And it's just like you know, calling me a honky or a cracker. And there was a time when that would be offensive enough in this society that white folk would have been up in arms. Unfortunately, white conservative Christians have been beaten down so hard that we don't even realize anymore how offensive stuff really should be. But guess what? Most of us really don't give a rat's backside what people have to say that are just lashing out to lash out. If you actually are Christian, then your first point of view is eyes towards the Lord. So there's none of these words that it might make you mad, but it's not really going to be the kind of thing that's going to make you change your life. It's not going to make you hate people. So if you see the term anchor baby and it offends you, well, then the question is why? Why does it offend you? Why does being called an anchor baby offend a child that was an anchor baby? None of this is code for any other racial disparity. It's not code for anything. When I call you illegal, it's not code for wetback. It's not code for beaner. Because that's not even accurate in and of itself. Anyway, while the majority of illegals in this country may very well be of Hispanic origin, it's certainly a long way off from all illegals being Hispanic. They're not all from Mexico or Guatemala or wherever south of our border that they're sneaking up. There are several different countries, and I like to differentiate between each one of them. The term other than Mexican fully applies to a vast majority of illegals, although still the vast majority of other than Mexicans are still Hispanic. You still have a ton of other folks coming across our border illegally that are not Hispanic, that are not from Mexico. So what? What difference at this point does that make? Well, it's plain and simple. Obviously, clearly, illegal is not a race. Therefore, it is not racist to use the word in describing someone who has come into our country completely devoid of respect of our laws. And I would be willing to stand with anyone else who wants to make the case that should somebody stand up and do that, then they're not worthy of being in our country in the first place, because it should be a privilege to be here. It's a privilege that way too many folks that are naturally born here take far too lightly. But it's a privilege that people in other countries that take the time to immigrate here legally, that take the time to do it the right way, they revere what America stands for, what America means to the rest of the world, what America means to the very concept of human dignity and liberty to every citizen around the world. The people who